I made a pretty risky bet back in November of 2022. Now, I try not to brag, but I'm pretty good at Webflow. I'm fast, I've built a lot of websites, and back in the summer, I had already built a coming soon page for the new Dive website. But I also spend too much time on design Twitter, and I kept seeing these really compelling photos and videos of people spinning up websites in Framer. And the more that I saw, the more convinced I was that this was what the future of web design looked like. So I made a bit of a crazy bet. I decided to build the new Dive website in Framer, even though I had exactly zero experience using the tool. Well, I'm over a year in now, and I'm so grateful that I made that decision. It's such an intuitive product. The spatial canvas, the way they handle breakpoints, components. Honestly, you kind of feel like you're in Figma, only then you have that beautiful publish button up in the top right. And man, when you click it, it just feels like magic. So if you're listening to this and you're comfortable in a different tool right now, maybe it makes sense to make a bet of your own. You can head to dive.club/framer to take that next step. Now onto the episode.
There's this thing called the design execution gap, right? There's this thing in your head that you want to build. You're able to picture it, but like you don't have the skills fully executed on yet. Once you've narrowed that gap, that's when I think you are like a builder.
Welcome to Dive Club. My name is Rid, and this is where designers never stop learning. Over the last few months, by far, the number one most requested topic has been design engineering. So I did a little digging to try to find who are the best possible people to teach us more about this topic, and I think I found them. So today we're doing a deep dive into design engineering at Vercel. We're gonna hear from two people, Glenn Hitchcock, who's the director of design engineering, and John Pham, who's a lead design engineer at Vercel. And the goal of this conversation is to really shine a light and paint a clear picture of what design engineering is and how the role works on a team like Vercel. And then we're also gonna try to outline a path that you can follow if you wanna learn some of these skills for yourself. So let's start at a high level and learn more about why design engineering is such a big focus at Vercel.
It's all about craft, really. Like everyone keeps tweeting about it. It's this intersect of design engineering where there's a tiny niche of people who like have the taste to go along with the engineering implementation. It will make your design process faster. Like when I work with John, I can produce a static markup in Figma. We talk about it for 2 seconds, he gets it, he builds it. If you look back through history of like the pipeline processes and like waterfall, it could be quite an arduous thing where you'd have to prototype whatever fidelity tool you had, and then you'd have to maybe animate it in After Effects. You can cut that process out. It's about simplicity and accuracy, but it's also about the jam that you get back from John and others. You'll have proper critique, proper design understanding, whereas your typical developer might not have that aesthetic taste. There are sensibilities learned by doing design separately from engineering, like being involved in the Figma process, being involved in just sketching, just do wireframes or even just strategy. I think it opens a lot of possibilities just because the gap, like the close to the bone nature of design engineering is just like liberating for any designer in Vercel.
You talked about the word velocity. I want to drill into that, but maybe first, can we just set the context? So like zooming out, looking at Vercel as an org, where do design engineers fit in? And maybe you can even give us a ballpark for like how many design engineers do you even have as it relates to the design team, and how does that impact the way that you staff projects? Anything that you want to share to just clarify how design engineering sits at Vercel?
Yeah,
that would be super helpful.
Well, so at Vercel, you've got three arms of the design team. You've got brand and creative, product design, design engineering. Currently, design engineering has 6 people. Design as itself is a central resource. So we have our own voice within the organization so we can help shape things. We're not just individuals staffed to projects and then don't talk to each other. It's highly collaborative. Some of our product designers could even be considered design engineers because they code their own solutions. Design engineering itself is sort of staffed in 2 ways. You've got a lot of product insights, so working on the dashboard and innovating there, through to the marketing approach, like Vercel.com refresh, next.js.org. It's really about shaping the narrative there, but also exemplifying the craft, because half of what you sell with the best websites out there is like how great is this experience when you first land. Like, is it fast loading? Does it have a nice interaction feel? Design engineering gives us a lot of that. They will make the tangible things really feel perfect.
How do you think about where to sweat the details? Like, you talked about investing in things that the users care about. Obviously, not all these details are created equally. So maybe even like at a methodology level, or like, how do you as a company know where to really go that extra mile in craft?
A lot of it comes from leadership that functions as I see. So if you take the CEO, Guillermo, for example, he's got this great ability to like provide vision for the company and his business strategy. But then he would also think on an IC level, like, how can this animation be better? This new feature we launched, how could you make the sign-up experience better? And then like through to using the entire thing. We also strategize, like, we've got multiple directors of design. So product design, brand creation design, design engineering. So it allows us to see like, what's the best use of our time? Because we're a company of 400 and a design team of 20 currently and growing. We're looking to staff up this year. So we have to be wise, like what's going to provide the biggest impact? If you launch new features that are getting plugged heavily, or you know they'll get lots of traffic, it's always an insight to like, you know, this deserves John's polish or Rana's polish. And also with like the marketing side of things, we launched the homepage. We're launching more pages. Like, we've added more to our solutions tab on the navbar. It's just a case of making sure our narrative is the same as we have internally, so we're all talking the same language, and picking in when to choose, like, how do we launch like the latest update to the Vercel story.
You mentioned design, like having an impact at a high level on Vercel's roadmap and the way that you think about like company operations. Can you just clarify, like, what does that look like?
I think one of the key things is your leadership needs to be able to acknowledge the value of design and see it in the industry. Fortunately, we've got like that respect with the product, with marketing, with the C level. They all understand the value and like know that our community are the kind of ones to retweet, repost. Anything will get shared. Any level of craft will be shared. So when you build that association with your brand, it's great for you. So if we can echo that through the storytelling of the website, the experience in the dashboard that you get once you've signed up, through to like our events like Vercel Ship and NextConf, if you conquer all those three things, then it like helps build your brand a better image. For me, like, one of the key things as a product designer is making sure all these nice bells and whistles that you might have with your marketing site and then the great narrative goes through to your sign-up phase, to your first deployment, to any future collaboration that you do within your teams. It shouldn't feel like two halves of a coin where one's completely different, because it's quite easy to separate the product and the marketing side of things. Whereas fortunately, because design engineers here are so multi-talented and they can roam across many things, they're able to affect both and keep both consistent.
I want to drill into how design engineers and traditional designers at Vercel collaborate and work together. And there's obviously a lot that we could talk about. One thing that I really want to understand more, though, is how is prototyping split between these roles? Like, who is doing what types of early explorations in a project?
I think the fastest and most efficient workflow we found is the designer will create the static version in Figma. So it's either a single frame or like maybe five frames out of the animation, but they don't worry about the actual like keyframes or like easing functions. It's kind of wasted effort to do it outside of your intended like target medium, because there's always going to be like nuances, right? Like an ease in animation curve in Figma might look and feel totally different versus Chrome or inside of Safari. So prototyping as close to like the medium that you're actually going to be shipping, like, that's more valuable, because you're able to like find all of the quirks and like polish those details versus spending time polishing details that don't matter in the end. One specific example, it's like Glenn Mike come up with like five frames. Let's say it's a bouncing animation. We'll hop onto like a quick chat for like a couple minutes. We'll talk about like what's the look and feel that we want for this. And then we'll hop into code, we'll start building it. And then I will send Glenn a preview link. Depending on how complex the animation, like, we might scaffold like a playground around it. So now Glenn is able to like control all the variables into the animation without being blocked by me.
A lot of times when we talk about design engineering, it does come down to animations. How often are you exploring or maybe even pushing back on like the core design layout itself?
I think a nice thing about our relationship with the designers and design engineers and everyone across the company is there's no handoff, versus previous companies where I've worked at, like, the handoff is like, here's the final like version, like you need to implement it, or like you need to contribute your part. There's no collaboration on like the artifact that's being handed off. Versus at Vercel, like whatever first sketch that Glenn draws, all of it's up for debate. And Glenn is super open for like feedback and like jamming on ideas, because we both know that our like intentions going into this is to like build something better, not to like boost our egos.
I think there's an interesting trade-off that happens there, because a lot of designers I know care deeply about maintaining Figma as an up-to-date source of truth and really reaching for like parity with the end product and what is in production. Where if you have a much more fluid process and almost like no handoff checkpoint, does that just mean that you care less about what is actually in the Figma files, because a lot of it might end up being designed and figured out in code?
Design tools are like better than they've ever been, especially for web and UI design. For us, like our Figma is pretty up to date. We try to do desktop, mobile, tablet, just to give an indication to design engineers of like how can the layout reconfigure, and things like Figma's variables have made that insanely easy, like very few clicks processes. I do like to have a source of truth in Figma, not necessarily as a Bible, like explicitly telling design engineers what they can and can't do, but it's a nice point for anyone to come back in future and be like, I'm going to iterate on this page. How do I best do that? Taking a screenshot from your browser is absolutely fine if you're changing small elements, but if you're reconfiguring a lot to the layout, it's just easier to do it with the existing elements. I know there's always a bit of pushback on like the industry sometimes, where it's a case of, is design systems like too overbearing? I don't know, like the tools to me these days are so simple that you can just quickly iterate on them and it takes minutes to maintain. And then that way, anyone coming back in future, let's say it's not you on the design, like the project gets handed off to someone else, or as a newcomer to the company, it just gives them a better starting point to keep iterating.
You mentioned design systems. Can you expand on that point a little bit? Like, how do you think about where that right line exists for how much we're going to architect a system, and then maybe even like the role that design engineers play in maintaining and evolving that system?
I think it's always wise to have like all your primitives, like all the elements that we've shared in our design system guides, like buttons through to selects and tables. It's always handy to have like a reference point of like how something should look. And if it stays linked in Figma, or if it stays linked in code, it means you can impact on a wider scale. Any tweaks, aesthetic refreshes, accessibility enhancements, you can just like impact the entirety of your product in very few steps. I wouldn't go to the level of systemizing everything, like every view that you've ever had. It's just not beneficial. And there will naturally always be, in the engineering process, like these states that you haven't thought of, these errors where configurations can be wildly all over the place. So I think it's always good to have like, you know, a few visuals just to refer back to as like the vision of this work. But I wouldn't spend, you know, all your time keeping it up to date. It's just not super beneficial, and it's more efficient to keep rolling on new ideas.
Hey guys, real quick, if you know me, then you know I love products. So I want to take just 30 seconds to tell you about three of my favorites. Now, anytime that I'm designing and building a website, you better believe that I'm going to use Framer. I made the switch recently and I'm never going back. Now, once it's time to animate my designs and showcase my work, that's when I'm going to use Jitter. It's like Figma, only for motion design. And every step of the way, I'm going to be using Raycast constantly. It's the cornerstone of how I use my computer and the way that I stay in flow while I work. Now, I hand selected Framer, Raycast, and Jitter to partner with me so that I could do these interviews full time. So if you want to show them some love, it would mean a lot. Okay, now on to the rest of the episode. You talked about how some of the designers at Vercel can code. So I'd like to clarify roles a little bit, because you have like front-end developers, you have designers who can code, and now you have design engineers. Are those actually different people? Like, help us think about where the lines are drawn.
So a lot of our designers used to be software engineers, so they've coded to some production extent in the past. They take all of that experience and like that helps inform their designs. Some of them are like always down to like write the code themselves, but there's no expectation for them to do that, because they're not coding day to day. So like the time for them to implement a feature might be like twice as long versus like a software engineer doing it. Design engineers are like expected to code. Like that's our primary like artifact that we are expected to deliver. So that's what we do. There's some software engineers who also do design or like have a strong sense of like what's the Vercel like craft and taste. But most of the time, the software engineers will pair with either a designer or a design engineer when working on a new feature.
Are there ever features where design engineers will assume all of the design role and you won't even staff a traditional designer on that project?
It depends on the scope of the project. If it's a multi-month like feature, there's probably a full-time designer like thinking about all of the use cases for it. But if it's a small feature that takes like, let's say like less than a week to build, then oftentimes like a design engineer might take full ownership of it. But we're still collaborating with other designers and other engineers to figure out, like, is this the best thing that we're building?
In that situation, are you getting into Figma at all, or are you just jumping straight into code?
For me personally, I jump straight into code because drawing a box in a browser is a lot faster and easier for me versus drawing a box in Figma.
Okay, so then let's talk about, like, how much do the skill sets vary within the six design engineers at Vercel? Like, how wide is this spectrum of skills?
It's quite wide because, like, yeah, design engineering is a niche, like a small margin that intersects, but within it, you could be any kind of design engineer.
Yeah.
We have people who are excelling in 3D and doing things with math that I don't understand, through to like Shad working on Shad CN UI, heavy design systems focus, understanding the componentization of design, through to people who love working on interaction, accessibility, and then all the way to insights, like what's the design psychology of the marketing page that you're rolling out? Like, where are people going to click? Is it driving the right analytics drivers that we need? It's not a one-fits-all sort of scenario, especially what I try to echo when we've tried hiring is we're not looking for specific profiles. So I'm not looking for the exact copy of someone who already works here. We want to acknowledge anyone for their traits that they have, because a lot of people with the design engineering title will come from a completely different background. And it's just become this more modern title that appreciates the two aspects of their job, but doesn't necessarily sum up, you know, they are both 50-50 on design and engineering. It could be any sort of weighting.
As someone who has some technical skill set, but, you know, I am a traditional designer through and through, there are some obvious things where I understand, like, what design engineers have to think about. We've talked about animations, transitions, you know, page speed seems to be another obvious one. What else am I missing? Like, what are design engineers ultimately responsible for and thinking about throughout the life cycle of a project?
A often neglected one is accessibility. Like, something might look visually like stunning, but like the thing that we build, like, it should be usable by like everyone who has access to the internet. Like, we're not building features for a specific type of abled person. Like, we're building it for everyone. That's one. Two is like maintainability and like scalability. The type of work we do ideally doesn't have like a linear impact. Like, it's multiplicative, right? So even when we're building like what seems like a one-off animation or like a one-off visual, like, we want to think about like, how can we reuse this in the future? It might be used in like another marketing context, or it might be used in the product. So if you build these components with a fixed assumption of like, this is only ever going to be used in marketing, then if and when it comes to we want to use this inside of a product context, there's a lot more like additional work that needs to be done to make it work in that context versus like spending that time upfront, making sure it's generic enough to work across different contexts.
And how much of that is coming from like the designer communicating the intent to you versus, you know, kind of figuring out that and making those assumptions on your own?
I think for most of us on the team now, we build everything to be generic because we've all experienced the pain and cost of like having to redo something because requirements change. And in a startup or in any company, like, requirements will always be changing. One note is like, this like additional effort doesn't really slow us down. We've built up enough experience over the years where like this just comes as like second nature. Like, this is the default way that we work in now.
To back that up, it's just assumed that we'll plan for the future with these things, whether it's like a very nice interaction, visual, or new UI paradigm. It's kind of like, let's not just throw it away and then like use it on this one thing, this one time. And it's good for the designers and the design engineers. They know, like, you know, let's record this for posterity. Let's share it. So the knowledge base is like wider than just the two or three that are working on this specific area.
I think that some of the things you're talking about are more obvious in a product, more like dashboard context, where we kind of think about design systems and reusability. But you mentioned marketing, John, which is a little bit less clear to me. Like, what does building things for generic uses within like a marketing site context look like, Adversal?
No matter which marketing page you land on, like there's a common theme or like design language across all of them. Like a common one is like, there's five things on the left, it flows into like a middle thing, and then like something else flows out to the right. Like that's a generic visual component, but like the stuff that's inside those circles might be different on the AI page, and it might be different versus our CI/CD page, right?
For example, you might be showing like AI vendors versus Git repos. And the main reason for that is this reusability can help spin up marketing pages in like seconds. So we're all hooking into Contentful so that all these things could be editable by more than just the design engineers. Same goes for the visuals, where it's a case of like you choose from a library of visuals that we've assembled over the last year of building this Reverse.com refresh. And just it makes the velocity of not just the design element, but the entire team's element to, like, let's say we have a composable migration page, which we're putting ads out on for a specific type of person. It borrows the same language, the same assets, but it just it doesn't require design to get fully involved with it again. It's already like the craft is here. We just need to change and reshape the story to be about this other thing that we want to market.
Can you talk a little bit about design engineering's role in like the creative direction then? Because a lot of the concepts that you have on these marketing pages are, I mean, absolutely impossible to bring to life in Figma, which that kind of makes me wonder, like, how much of that direction is coming from the designer versus the design engineer? Like, is there ever a situation where you're just like, what if we did this really cool thing that a designer maybe wouldn't even be able to understand is possible?
Plenty of times during the Vercel.com refresh, designer like Rano Henry have got involved and been like, what if we change like the entire layout to be 2x2 so that it's like more reusable and then you can stack columns. They thought about the sort of the Contentful types that are available to us. So like, let's say we build up a library of 20 to 30. They provide insights to like, how systematic can we make this thing? Because it increases the velocity of future pages, but it also increases how like nimble we can be with reshaping our story. Because there'll always be feature enhancements and changes in direction within any company. So it sort of allows your site to not become a fixed point of marketing, and it can be reshaped on a faster basis. I think I saw a tweet out there, and I can't remember what it was, but someone was showing their Figma, and they had all these like variant properties down the right side, and they were just like configuring an entire layout of a very long page, like 20,000 pixel tall page, within like a short time frame, because they'd assembled, and they'd had that forethought, and it was great because it was showing like variants to keep visual interest as you go reading down this story. And in the same essence, we've had feedback within Vercel that have helped to shape the visual design that way, so that things are a lot more modular. Things can be turned on and off when and as you need, like let's say to marry up with campaigns that are going out, or perhaps features that get retired or introduced.
Can you talk a little bit more about that feedback process? Like, I think a lot of designers listening, they're familiar with Crit. Is there an equivalent for design engineers? Are they part of like a traditional Crit? Like, how does that inner team collaboration work?
There's no like moment where we're like booking a call to have a critique. It's a case of I'm in the design. Even if it's like half done and like half the visuals are not there and it's obviously messy, the design here does not care if you get involved and start pointing out things or coming up with ideas. I don't think anyone here is precious, because we realize it's an entire collaborative process and it'll be made better by having other opinions. The one thing I've learned in my career is that you won't always have the best idea the first time around. So welcome every sort of stakeholder that's involved. And the sooner design engineers like start commenting on your Figma file, the better, because it's like you get these insights to how to shape things, and there's no lost time 2 weeks down the lane where they could have said something.
On the engineering side, most of our projects are all done in like open Slack channels, so like anyone is able to join. So we do receive two types of feedback. If I'm working on like a visual and I want to get feedback, I'll post it inside the channel. Inside the channel, all of the stakeholders and all of the people involved are already in there. But I know there are specific people across the company that might not be working on that project where like I want specific feedback on them. Like, there's one person that's super great at copywriting. I want their feedback. There's one person that like somehow knows like Bezier curves like super well. So like I want their feedback.
Okay, so let's zoom out a little bit here and kind of talk about the broader trends and where this role fits in. And I want to start by reading a quote, actually, and it's from Maggie Appleton. And she says, software design and software development aren't two different disciplines. They're the same discipline, grotesquely chopped into two halves, leaving us with poorly designed, buggy, and inelegant software. What's your take on that?
I think it's a great quote. If you boil down what these two sides are doing, it's just you're building software with different languages. Maybe there'll one day be this shared environment where code and aesthetic exist at the same time. So you're just all working on the same artifact rather than it being a split. I think you're just waiting for the tooling to get there for that to be a reality. And then you won't have such hardline titles.
Do you see that tooling advancement as an inevitability? Like, what do you think it would actually take to get there? Because I think you have a very interesting perspective coming from Vercel and Sketch.
I would love for it to happen one day. Like, I remember when I was working on iOS apps, doing stuff in Xcode storyboards, and I felt like this is the inevitable future. We're not quite there yet. Like, no one's really conquered that space. And, like, you know, Figma have got their dev tools, which are hoping to turn the facsimile of your design into code. But yeah, I don't know. I see it logical one day of there just being not one tool that does it, but like one tool to introduce the concept of a shared space where anyone can just flip over to the other side and you're doing the same thing. Because like the inspector of Figma right now is essentially you're mocking up CSS, but with a better user interface. So why couldn't it just be the same shared environment?
So do you think that design engineer as a role will exist in the long run? Or is this just like the first step toward more of like a convergence of discipline?
I think it's just a temporary role. Like as technology becomes easier to use, as people get introduced to technology earlier on in their lives, like people will become more digital native, and like the craft and like taste and like the skills to like build experiences that they want to build, there will probably be people who specialize on like very specific skills that take like a substantial amount of like time and skills to learn. But if you want to build like a solution for like a problem, I think the final end game role will just be builder, because that's what you're doing. Like you want to build a solution for like a problem that you or other people have. You're not going to wear a single hat saying I only do code or I only do design. Like you're going to build a solution. It doesn't matter.
I love the word builder. And I've even started feeling that a little bit myself, like just even with ChatGPT. And it feels silly, but actually as someone that understands kind of how front end works, but doesn't know a lot of syntax, it superpowers, because I can just describe, like, I want a function that does X, Y, and Z with these two props, make it happen. And it kind of works. And so you can kind of start to feel like, hey, maybe I can actually be an engineer.
I think once we get to the place where our tools let us express intent, and then it just happens, and then we're able to like fine tune that intent, because the machine's not going to get it right the first time probably. That's when everyone has the tools and accessibility to be able to build what they want. And we're not gatekeeping the creation of software to like people who spend 4 years in university.
Yeah, I think from the AI side of things, influencing or assisting your current jobs, it probably lets the designers become like more code proficient. It lets the engineers become more like aesthetically efficient. Like let's say they use something to generate like a vibe, a general vibe, and then they can actually code around it. It sort of brings both roles together. And like you say, the convergence is a builder, just but they have different tools to assist them in getting there.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like code-based design it's just design, but at a greater fidelity. And I've even felt that a little bit using Framer, where it's like, I'm doing the same thing. I'm still drawing my rectangles, only it just feels like this is at a higher fidelity because it is inherently responsive and getting closer to what the medium is.
I loved using Framer to set up my own site. And it was like the first tool in the world where it's like, I appreciate that I can resize my browser whilst using the tool to understand everything I'll see when I go and publish it. And I'd love to see more of that like Framer, but for like iOS.
Yeah, did you see the Dieter Rams component page in Framer by chance?
Yeah. That was incredible.
That was pretty cool, right? Because it's like, this is almost not even a website. It's like a collection of product building blocks, but a designer made them in Framer, and they are code and they work. And you could see how all you'd have to do is just plug it on top of like a state layer and connect it to an API.
Yeah, that was a great project.
John, I'd like to ask you a question. And really the goal is to try to understand like how people can grow into this more technical role of design engineer, or even just still being a designer, but getting more familiar and comfortable with the front end. You've been at Vercel now for 2 years. Can you talk a little bit about what are the ways you've grown as a design engineer from that start to finish?
So I'll talk growing into a design engineer from the engineering side, but Glenn will probably be better from designer into design engineering, even though he says he doesn't do it day to day. When I first started Vercel, I joined as a software engineer. And then at the time, like I paired like pretty heavily with the designers. That's when you collaborate with them. Vercel was the first place where like I collaborated with designers versus being handed off something. When I was handed off something, like I didn't understand the why or intent behind the design. So like I never learned why like a certain layout was used or like a certain type of typography was used. At Vercel, every designer wants to collaborate with you because they want to ensure that the thing that gets shipped is the thing that they designed, because we've probably all experienced where like the design handles like 100% of the user's problem, but because of engineering constraints, we have to cut scope and now only 70% of the solution gets shipped. No one wants to end up on that situation. So collaborating with all of the designers, like that taught me like why and what good design is. And as you work with them, they're basically mentoring you for free. Instead of paying for like a masterclass, if you pair with a designer at Vercel, that's your free masterclass.
From my side, like design to design engineering, having worked at Sketch, like I frequently learn the terminology of all of the iOS and Xcode and macOS specifics, which was like an introduction to like the fidelity of engineering you need to understand as a designer to build around native systems. When it comes to web, what I've learned with Vercel is to really care about like how will this artifact that you produce in Figma translate? And it's everything from like the bigger scale of, am I recording all the states in this design? Am I thinking about the situations this page or this product feature can be in? Through to things like accessibility performance, like does your state have the right focus labels with them? Do the SVGs that you're putting together, are they simple enough so that they don't like introduce a huge part to the DOM? Could I go into Illustrator, take my SVG across, simplify paths, and result in a more performance site because you sort of cut it down from being this massive sprawl of SVG code. I think it's attention to detail that it teaches you, because any feedback I'll get from John will be a case of, oh, I can make that part of my process the next time around.
It's interesting that you two came from different directions, one joining as designer, one joining as engineer. I'm assuming there was a point in time recently at Vercel where you made the strategic decision to create this new pillar of the design org. And I'm sure there's people listening who are maybe on the fence and considering doing something similar. So can you talk about that moment in time? Like what led up to it, and what were some of the things that you had to do for this portion of the org to exist?
From what I can remember, I think we had a few design engineers 1 or 2 years ago, but no real formal department. It was just a case of these existed within design. There was no specific pillar. As companies like Stripe and Linear have like popularized the title and made the craft more visible within the industry, I think we just saw that, you know, there's a few more in this company that really do hit the marks on the accuracy, the understanding of design, and to like formalize like strategy about where we put them, how best can we use their practice and principles. That's when I think it was last year that we sort of incorporated the design engineering department.
Our like previous VP of product, her name was Kathy. She wanted to start the design engineering team because at the time, software companies, like the differentiator is the look and feel. That is one of the core differentiators of Vercel. And as the company like scaled up, you start losing that sense of polish because the company's scaling, right? You can't ship 100 features and also make sure all 100 features are like super high quality. So she wanted to like have designated people that have the room and like ownership to like focus on all those core details. The core product teams are able to ship their features, but a design engineer is able to like assist them in making sure it reaches the bar that we want to meet.
You talked about differentiating based off of look and feel. I'm curious, do you have a sense of when it makes sense to pursue this level of craft and design as a differentiating factor? Like if different companies and different types of teams are listening to this, when would it make sense to consider pursuing a design engineering department in the short run versus maybe saying, you know what, I'm going to leave this to the Vercels and the Linear and the Stripes of the world?
I think it goes hand in hand with investing in a good design team. To put it nicely as possible, to go from like a internal like tool to like a product. Products nowadays, because of how technology has made it so easy to like build stuff, there's so much technology out there now. If you want to stand out, like you need to invest in design. And design doesn't just mean this looks visually nice. It needs to feel good to use as well.
You've got a case of escalation. Everyone's doing a great job of investing in it. So if anything doesn't look that sort of high bar, you get judged on it. Right? If you've got two competing platforms and one looks better on the introduction, they've put more investment into like just appealing to you. You might make your decision call based on that rather than actually exploring the product. it depends how much effort they're putting on their design engineering first appearance, like you hit their landing page, versus does it trail off into the rest of the product? Do you feel the same vibe?
Can we talk about your landing page then a little bit? Because you shipped it at a point where the escalation did feel like it was at its peak and people had high expectations for what you were going to put out there. So it was like, oh man, what's Vercel going to ship? Like they're teasing this. I can't wait to see it. Like, how did you deal with that escalation internally and think about finding the balance between wowing people, getting the retweets, but not pushing that too far?
So with our previous VP of design, with Rauno Henry and design engineering, we collaborated a lot in the early days of just doing something that fit the narrative of Vercel, because we're not just a CI/CD tool anymore. It's a case of we're a huge platform with lots of many tools to solve the developer experience. So how do you boil all of that down into sort of maybe the core things that you want to promote to get that hook so that people are interested in you whilst exemplifying craft? We wanted to do something that sort of set a vision for all these other pages and the tone going forward, so that whenever you see even the most basic of pages with Vercel, like let's say it's the legal page or whatever, you know it's like us with this like grid system, this typography. One of the things we wanted to also do is maybe not indulge in the same way other sites have. And I say that respectfully because they're doing amazing stuff. They're exemplifying their craft with micro animations, nice interactions. But there is a strategic value in, like, does this thing have to be animated? Is it going to draw too much attention away from the messaging that you're trying to write? Like, will a person understand what you're about just by the visual alone? Like, should you put all the bells and whistles on it? And one other thing I think about when I was, like, designing originally, and I was saying to Rauno, like, you know, we can animate this, animate that, animate that. I thought about childhood when, I don't know if you had it in America, but the Mousetrap game or the Screwball Scramble. You can put all these bells and whistles on one page and animate them all in one go, and it's delightful and it's interesting, but it steals away from the attention of everything a little bit. Yeah, it's just a case of restraint and using our time as best as possible as design engineers, because these things that are highly crafted and interactive can take a lot of time. Does it add that extra value if you put it behind everything you do?
And I think that was coming across even in this conversation by the amount of times that you used the word narrative and how that's kind of at the heart of everything. Like, does it contribute towards the narrative, or are we just adding the extra bell and whistle just to show off what we can
do? Our product marketing team and growth team, when they help us like write these stories and think about the content that we want to display, it's all about saying cohesive, so that when you travel across pages, the attention is on the copy. Like, people, there's always that quote that design is like 90% copy on when it comes to websites and UI, which is true. Like, the screen is dominated by text. So yeah, for all the visuals that you can assemble, there's no better value than putting together a really nice story.
I want to transition a little bit because you're hiring right now. For people who are listening, who are interested in this type of role, what's something that a candidate could do, maybe either in their portfolio or in the interview process, that would make you say like, wow, like I really want this person on the team?
I think the differentiator is you've shown a record of building and designing things that are fun, right? If your portfolio is just like standard software and design, like that's kind of not the right fit. For everything in your portfolio, like you want to have like pushed the expectations in like one single axis in some way. And that's very hard to like say, but when you see it, you see it.
Showing creativity behind your front end development skills or whatever coding skills they happen to be is an immediate way to draw the eye and be like, okay, this looks great. This feels great. Let's have a chat. If it's like typical front-end development where it's just a case of implementation, I think that stands out less because it's hard to see where the person has added their own spice to the mix.
I almost think there's like a pendulum swing happening right now where we're celebrating the ultra minimal text-only portfolios. Are you saying that that would potentially be a missed opportunity because you're not able to demonstrate front-end savvy?
No. Like the text-driven portfolios are an immediate take to me that this person is too busy to really like go and do something with bells and whistles. So I never judge that on a poor way. It's just a case of I'll read through like what story they've given me. There are so many great designers out there that have only copy-driven. And I think Daryl Jin put out a website yesterday, which was literally like, like very basic websites or something. I can't remember what the URL was.
That was what I had in mind, yeah.
Yeah. So in those scenarios, like, I would never judge someone poorly for that. It's just a case of I look through their work experience, like what links are they sharing? Who do they work for? What do their websites look like? Or what does their product look like? You've always got to dig deep. Like someone's portfolio is not the end all of how they should be assessed.
Hypothetically, just hypothetically, let's say that I want to apply for one of these design engineering roles. I'm a designer. I have, you know, a few years of coding experience. I wrote a bunch of the CSS for Maven in the early days. Like, I would consider myself enough to be dangerous on the front end. What is the threshold that I have to reach in terms of engineering savvy to be able to be considered a design engineer?
I've thought about this one. There's this thing called the design execution gap, right? There's this thing in your head that you want to build and like you're able to picture it, but like you don't have the skills to like fully execute it on yet. Once you've narrowed that gap, that's when I think you are like a builder.
I like that answer a lot. I definitely still have that gap. So thank you for putting me in my place. We've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else that we should be talking about or questions that I should be asking where you want to share more about the role or how design engineering works at Vercel?
We're not looking for copies of people. Like, everyone has their own individual identity as a design engineer. And it's such an early day for it to be a title that everyone's talking about. I think it might have been Stripe that sort of introduced it in the beginning, and then companies with sort of that high caliber continued. You'll probably find people reconfiguring their bios and like changing their title to design engineer, because that's how they feel like that's who they are in their job. So yeah, I just say, like, don't worry too much about looking at other design engineers at that company's profile and being like, I don't need to be like that. Everyone brings something to the mix. It's just a case of like, do they bridge the gap between designer and engineering? And do they exemplify quality in whichever way it is, whether it's accessibility, whether it's animation, whether it's visuals.
Glenn, John, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time today to share a little bit and give us a behind the scene glimpse of how design engineering works at Vercel. This has been much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks. And you, Rid, really appreciate it.
Hey, it's Rid. Don't forget, each week I send an email to over 10,000 designers with featured resources and key insights that you can use to take a leap forward in your career. Head to dive.club/email if you want to sign up. I'll see you next week.